Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Right now, I'm delighted to be joined in studio by Annalise Murphy. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks.
Waiting patiently outside. You've become quite used to waiting patiently on the Volvo Ocean Race, I'd imagine.
Yeah, basically the last 9 months of my life, just getting around the world in a particular, like a fast boat, but at times it felt very slow.
I would imagine so. So great to see you. You were in at Christmas, I think it was, where you were on a little bit of a break from the Volvo Ocean Race, and you were brilliantly honest, because I think generally when people do these major life events, and whether it's something like a marathon or an ultra marathon, or they're going solo across the Atlantic, you're sort of hardwired to go, yeah, it's a brilliant experience, it's a real learning experience, I'm loving every minute of it.
Yeah.
But you were, actually, this is pretty tough.
Oh, I think I was probably miserable at least 70% of the time.
Wow.
And then there were times where I was like, thought it was pretty amazing. But a lot of the time I was just thinking, why am I here? Like thinking of all the other places I'd prefer to be. So I really had to dig deep to, first of all, be a really good team player on the boat and work hard, and then actually just get to the finish, because there was a couple of times where I just thought, I am not cut out for this. I need to just go home and never go on a boat again.
So I know the Volvo Ocean Race has visited Ireland on a couple of occasions. For anybody listening who doesn't know anything about it, how big a jump was it from your laser boat to a Volvo Ocean Race, and why did you want to do it?
I actually didn't want to do it.
Why did you do it then?
The skipper, Dee Kafari, of our boat, she had contacted me, and she was saying she was putting together a 50-50 team, so 5 men, 5 women. She wanted 6 of the 10 people to be under 30. And, you know, was I interested? And I told her, well, I get really seasick. I've never done any offshore sailing, and I really don't think I'm cut out for it. And she said, well, why don't you just come down and give it a go? So I went down to Lisbon and did a 48-hour trial. And like the first 24 hours, I thought I was going to die because I was so seasick. Mm. Then the next 24 hours, I just was counting down the minutes until we could get back into Lisbon. So I didn't really know if I'd done that good a job. And I, you know, came in on shore, and the next day she said, so do you want to be on the team? I thought she was joking. I was like, really? And then I kind of had to really think about it. Like, is this something I actually will be able to do? And is it, you know, if I don't do it, would I regret it? And I sort of discussed it with a lot of different people, and I kind of was convinced that if I didn't do it, I'd regret it. You know, it's a once in a lifetime opportunity to get to compete in this race and to race around the world. So
And did it come at a very good time? Were you looking for something to just get yourself out of that Olympic mindset where everything would be focused totally on 2020?
Yeah, I was, I think, tired, and I was, you know, competing going, oh, well, the World Championships are on this year. But I'd done 10 World Championships in a row.
Obviously had worn off.
And I just wasn't quite as motivated as I was going and doing all the training, and I was sailing the boat well, but I think I just didn't really have the sort of energy to put in the sort of, I guess I wasn't feeling the same as I did after London, where I was like, had this sort of panic that I needed to be better than everyone. I kind of had managed to sort of get rid of that.
Well, that's great though, isn't it? In some ways that actually you came back from Rio satisfied.
Yeah, it was amazing. And so I sailed around the world, and it was an incredible experience, but so tough and horrible as well. Like, who doesn't want to not shower for 3 weeks at a time and get, if you're lucky, 4 hours sleep a day, split up over 3 naps? It's
right.
Yeah.
So when you signed up initially and you agreed to do it, firstly, is it a job? Are you getting paid to be on the sea for 9 months?
It is. It's a professional. They say it's like the world's most toughest professional race. And so it was actually my first time having a proper job, I guess, in a way.
Check coming in at the end of the week.
Yeah, getting a salary. So it was, now on our team, like some of the teams, it's, you know, it's the guys, the top guys are being paid really well. But on our team, we were sailing for the Clean Seas campaign, Turn the Tide on Plastic for the United Nations. So we didn't really have a big budget, but it was, you know, enough that I was getting to travel around the world for free. Yeah.
What was the longest spell you spent at sea?
22 days, going from Hong Kong to Auckland.
Right.
And it was actually, there was at times where I thought, we're never going to get there. And you kind of start to think, what can I do? You know, you kind of go close to an island. Like we went, I think we were 70 miles away from New Caledonia. I started to wonder, you know, if I took a life raft, could I paddle 70 miles? and or if I'd see a container ship, I'd wonder, you know, if I jumped off the back of the boat there, maybe I could swim over to that container ship and get in. But it was in general, it was okay. But there was a few legs where I just mentally got into such a dark place that I couldn't see any way out. And then I'd be so sort of upset out on the water thinking, why am I here, that I couldn't sleep. And then I'd be even more upset because I'd realise I hadn't managed to sleep for the 2 hours that I was meant to sleep. So now I was going to be awake for 16 hours instead. So wow. It was, the group of people that I was on the boat with were, you know, at times like you wanted to kill them, but in general it was a really cool group to be with.
So how did you get through that? Because just the lack of sleep, and when you talk about the mental strain, when people are under pressure, the basic advice usually is, well, take a break, step away.
Yeah.
And you couldn't.
No.
To even rest your mind for a couple of hours. What was the lowest point, and how difficult was that?
I think that's probably the toughest thing. It's like life is so simple when you're on the boat. We do 4 hours on, 4 hours off with watches. And you're 4 hours on, you're up on deck and you have jobs for your entire 4 hours. Your first 2 hours, you're generally on the grinding pedestals helping trim the sails. And then your second 2 hours, you're normally then a sail trimmer and then a driver. And so your 4 hours are pretty full on. And then when you come off for your 4 hours off, you have to go down below and you generally have to bail out the boat a bit because it's full of water all the time. And then you boil the kettle and you make your freeze-dried meal, which is really not delicious at all.
What's the best freeze-dried meal?
There's a pulled pork, which is pretty great.
Oh, can only imagine.
Yeah, but it loses its novelty pretty quickly. but in general, it was awful. You can't look at the food or else you won't want to eat it. So generally you're just eating it in the dark.
For energy, yeah. Get you through to the next one.
And then you eventually manage to get into bed about an hour into your off watch. And then you get into bed and you can hear the navigator talking about doing a manoeuvre, a sail change or something. And you know that actually you're going to get woken up in about half an hour's time. You have to put all your gear back on, go back up on deck, do the sail change and go back down. So generally you didn't really get your 4 hours off. If you were lucky, you got 4 hours off, but normally you wouldn't. So that was, you're pretty sleep deprived. And the first few days are really tough, but then you get used to it. But maybe everyone's just really angry the whole time and you don't realise because everyone's sleep deprived.
Well, for 22 days, so that means for 22 days, you didn't have any spell where you had more than, say, 3 hours of consecutive sleep?
Yeah, 2.5 hours is probably the most sleep I got at any one time. So.
And do you ever get a break?
No.
Over that? So it's 4 hour spell, try and sleep for 2 or 3 hours, 4 hour spell, try and sleep for 2 or 3 hours, regardless of whether it's day or night.
Yeah. And then sometimes you just, even though you're tired, you don't want to sleep. You want to do something else. So I got my iPod, I'd watch a Netflix program or listen to a podcast. And then you realise, I'm like, I really should have actually gone to sleep there. But you need to try and turn
your brain to something else.
Yeah, you want to do something else. And there'd be some days where, even though you're on a boat with a bunch of people, you'll be talking about the boat performance and sail trim, but you actually will never have a chat or a conversation. You never sit down and have a cup of tea and just, talk about the day. It's just, you don't get that. But, and then it's also really wet. The boats are designed to be really wet.
Why?
I don't know. I'm sure they could make them that they're drier.
This sounds like something when you were lying in bed and soaking wet, having just had your wonderful pulled pork. Why is this set up that it's so bloody wet? Surely there's a better way.
Yeah. Particularly at the start of the race, I didn't understand things that if you didn't put your boots on properly, then the water is going to sort of rush down your boots and straight up your legs. So we left Lisbon in a lot of wind and I got hit by a wave, got washed off the pedestal where I was standing to the end of my lifeline. And the water went straight up my legs. Basically I got fire hosed all inside my wet weather gear. And then I was wet for the rest of until we got to the doldrums where I was able to change into shorts and t-shirts. I just had wet gear on. And
this is magnificent. I can't believe you ended up in this situation. Did you not talk to anyone beforehand?
No, because I knew if I talked to people too much, I'd seen videos and I knew it was going to be bad. But then you just try and pretend it's not going to be bad. But it was, now that it's done, I'm that wasn't so bad. But if you'd asked me, I'd say even a month ago, I would have gone, I'm never going offshore again. I think I probably still am at the I'm never going offshore again. I quite like going out sailing and coming back in.
What was the final leg?
It was from Gothenburg to The Hague. So it was only 3 days.
And was that, you had just gone around Ireland before that?
We'd gone from Cardiff to Gothenburg, going up around Ireland, which was actually really cool. And it was like really nice weather, going like down by Baltimore and around Clear Island and the Fastnet and then like the Skelligs and everything. And it was like sunny and nice wind, and everyone on the boat was going, wow, Ireland's really beautiful. And I was like, yeah,
like
it is.
All the time.
And then when we were going around the top of Scotland, it was horrible. They're like, oh, Scotland's terrible. I was like, yeah, it is.
Don't go on holidays there. And so then when you arrived into The Hague,
yeah,
did you get the feeling of satisfaction, of achievement that you wanted?
I think I was really proud of myself that I didn't quit, because I nearly quit in Hong Kong.
How close?
Well, initially, the only thing that managed to keep me sane getting from Melbourne to Hong Kong was my plan that I was going to get off the boat, go straight to the airport and book the first flight back to Europe. I didn't care where in Europe, just back to Europe so I could get home. And then I got in and I thought, I haven't showered in 3 weeks. I really better have it. They might have let me on a plane. So I was like, I'll go and have a shower first. And then I got back to the hotel. I was like, I'm really tired. I might have a night's sleep first. And then I spent a week just talking to people. And I told a lot of people how I wanted to quit and go home. And then a few people convinced me I should, you know, try and stay and keep on doing it. And then our skipper, she said, you know, really want you to keep on, you know, keep, you know, being in the team. And then I just thought, well, I've got loads of friends in Auckland, so I just need to manage to get to Auckland and then I'll get to see them.
And would you, when you arrive in Auckland, do you get much downtime?
You do. Every stopover, we got through to 5 or 6 days off.
Okay.
And there was loads of really cool places. So I got to see some amazing, you know, sort of countries and cities around the world as I made my way around. So those were the good times.
It's obviously a certain type of personality that will put themselves in that situation in the first place. But do many people quit?
Some people quit in the race. And then some people, like one of the guys, it was his 8th race. And I just, even the people on our boat that it's like their 2nd or 3rd race, I think they must be mad. Because I just, it's totally mad. I'm really happy I've done it, but I just don't think I could do it again.
So did you develop some sort of, and you speak about trying to read a book here, listen to a podcast here, and you obviously you get quite close to the people on board and you do have some conversations, mm-hmm. but when you do find yourselves mentally really struggling, did you develop sort of mental tics that could recharge the batteries for yourself that you could get through another 4 hour spell, 8 hour spell? Yeah. Did you try and break it down like that, or how did it work?
Kind of. Like one of the guys in our boat, he used to break it down to how many off watches he had left, so how many sleeps he had left. But what I just did was I tried to not have really big highs and lows. And when I was feeling really bad, I'd like look at the sunset or the sunrise or the sky at night, or there'd be dolphins swimming beside the boat, or you'd see whales or something like that. I'd try and look at like things that so few people get to see and just go, this is actually really amazing. Like, a lot of people would kill to be in this opportunity, you know, getting to do this, and I'm actually really lucky right now. And it did make it a little bit easier, like, you know, just to take
away. So many times you can tell yourself you're really lucky right now.
Yeah. But it was it was really tough, and but also I think actually humans, like having done this race, I never thought I'd be able to do it, and you're actually really amazing, like people in general. It just, when things are hard, like, you know, it's hard and you're really tired and you're really cold and you just kind of get on with it. And, you know, people say, oh, I couldn't do that. And I was like, well, I thought I couldn't do it. But, you know, I'm not saying it was easy and I'm not saying I had the most wonderful time, but you do kind of just, you're kind of, I don't know, sort of your body, I guess, protects itself a bit and you just sort of power through.
So do you come back a different person, a refocused, different mindset?
I think so. I've come back and I've decided to change into a different boat to go to Tokyo in. So I'm sailing with one of my friends now, Katie, and I'm just really sort of excited and re-energized to try and kind of get back onto the top of sort of small boat sailing.
Yeah. So you were in the Laser Radial for London and for Rio, and obviously brilliant success and won the silver medal in Rio. What was it straight away you were thinking you wanted to go down a different route, or why would you, considering you were at the very top of that level, why change?
I think I had been sailing the laser radial, that's like a one person boat, for basically my entire life, from when I was about 14 until 26, 27, all, my whole life was revolved around sailing the laser by myself. And then doing this race, being in a big team, like, we didn't do well that often. But when we did do well, it was such a good feeling being involved in a team with, a whole group of people sort of getting to experience, doing well in the race. And then I started to think I'd like to sail, in a two-person boat and try and, achieve something with someone else, so that it's not just sort of me by myself. And also, it's lonely when you're by yourself the whole time. And I also think, maybe, if I mess up, it'll be the two of us messing up rather than just me.
it sounds like an interesting transition then from coming back from Rio and that high. What you're looking back now a couple of years on, was it that you were just totally satisfied with what you'd achieved and you needed to move on to a different stage in your life? Or could you have just easily gone through the motions for the next 4 years?
I think... I wasn't born thinking I'm going to win an Olympic medal. I actually never thought I'd win an Olympic medal. I don't think I was like, I'm going to be the champion. Like, I was generally...
Until when?
I don't think I ever did. I knew I was able to do well and sail well and be better than everyone else. I knew I trained hard and I was smart when I was on the race course. But
you grew up in a house, your mother was an Olympian.
Yeah.
So it must have been in your head.
But I never thought I could actually win an Olympic medal. It's such a hard thing to do. It's really hard. And that's why, I've seen so many amazing athletes that I've, either in other sports or in sailing, that I've been friends with, that have never managed to win an Olympic medal. Sure. And I kind of wonder, how did I manage to do it? Like, not just once, but I nearly did it twice. And, I finished in Rio and I was a little bit disappointed that I didn't win a gold medal, but I was also extremely happy with just winning a silver medal. And I think it made me realise I was happy to try and a new challenge and learn how to sail a new boat. And it also goes much faster and is way more fun. So
right. But I guess then, because you already have the Olympic medal, is it a case that you need something else alongside it, that if you go through this four-year process, what you went through in London, that you gave it your absolute all, mm-hmm. and even that isn't enough sometimes to get a medal, that either way you'd be able to look back in Tokyo in 2 years and hopefully you get the medal. But if you don't, you'll have had this great journey along the way that was really enjoyable, that you weren't out in the boat by yourself for months on end, that actually was just a bit of crack as much as anything else, which you're not really meant to say when you're in elite sport.
But you have to be, I think that you actually have to be having fun to perform at your best. It doesn't mean that you're not going to be stressed and you're not going to be working hard.
Or that you're not taking it seriously.
No, but you need to go out and be enjoying what you're doing to some level. I think there's a few people, I think, that maybe don't enjoy their sport. But in general, people, the reason why they're doing well is because they love what they're doing. Mm. And it's quite easy to just keep on going and not be enjoying it so much anymore. And yeah, I think just having new challenge and... I want to go sailing all the time at the moment. Well, I don't know if I would want to be going sailing all the time if I was just back out of my laser, because I'd be just going out by myself, slogging away, going up and down Dublin Bay alone.
There she is again.
Yeah. Well, now instead we're just capsizing our way around Dublin Bay.
How different is it then?
It's very different. It's there's three sails and there's trapezes, so you wear a harness and you stand out over the side of the boat rather than hang out over the side of the boat. So it's actually much more comfortable than the last boat. And you go about four times faster, which is the best bit about it.
And when you were thinking about what route you were going to go down if you were leaving the laser, was this always the route you were going to go down? Or did you look at it and think there's an opportunity here for us to medal, that the depth of competition isn't what it is in some of the other categories? Or how did you figure it all out?
There was quite a lot of things. It was something that I decided I wanted to do while I was doing the Volvo Ocean Race. I think while I was doing it, it made me realise I didn't want to go and do an offshore, sort of be that for the rest of my life, and I wanted to go back because the Olympic racing is just amazing and the standard is so high. But the 49er FX, it was a new class for Rio, so it's still relatively new. It hasn't been established for the last, you know, 3 or 4 Olympics, where people are just really good. A lot of people are still coming into the class, they're new, people are learning, and I kind of just, you know, that sort of will help me a lot with it's not at a really sort of high level. And then also to qualify for the Olympics will be in Auckland in December 2019. So we have a year and a half from when we started training 2 weeks ago until then to try and sort of perfect get this, as, you know, get as good as possible.
And who do you talk to then to try and get to as high a level as possible? I know there's been a lot of changes behind the scenes in sailing in Ireland and at the elite level. So if you're going into a relatively new side of the sport, mm-hmm. who are the people you can lean on to get the level of expertise that you need?
Sort of lots of different people. Like at the moment, we've had all of the younger guys coming out and helping us. And I think they think that I'm totally mental. I just basically walked off the side of the boat today. And Rob, one of the guys, was just looking. He was like, where's Annalise gone? I was underwater.
Oh, no.
And but then, yeah, we've got a coach coming over to help us. And then it's about bringing in, I guess, like expert coaches to help. And we've got, there's a few guys that have been sailing the 49er for a long time in Ireland, and they're being really helpful as well. So it's, we need a lot to sort of fast track us past the kind of learning stage. But
what's your teammate's name?
Katie Tingle.
So you have your Olympic medal.
Mm-hmm.
Katie doesn't.
No.
Have you matched your aspirations? And is so you've obviously been away for quite a while. You know, is Katie keen to get out in the water for 10 hours a day? And you're like, no, fine, it's fine.
She is. No, she's awesome. We actually sailed together when we were in Optimists, which is like the for kids.
Okay.
When we were sort of 11 and 12, we were sailing the same boats together. And then we never really sailed. Then after that, she sailed different boats. And then she went and got a real job and became a primary school teacher. And then I convinced her to come and sail for the next 2 years with me.
No so, pressure then.
Yeah, I know.
Love your life. It'll be fine. It'll all work out.
I know.
With all that time you had for thinking then on the boat, and maybe you didn't have much time for thinking in the Volvo Ocean, right? Like, have you thought about the future then, and how many Olympics you'd like to go through, and what comes after sailing? Or is just being on the water and sailing, do you feel that's just always going to be your life?
I think that was something that I was always afraid of, that sailing couldn't just be my life. But having done this race, I've realised there's a massive sort of professional sailing circuit where you don't have to go offshore, that you can just go out sailing and come back in at the end of the day. That, you know, they're always looking for people to come and sail on boats. And so I'll always have that as an option. And then, I don't know. Yeah, I just kind of am figuring it out. I'm just kind of, at the moment, I'm just going, well, I've got 2 years until the Tokyo Olympics, so I'll figure out what I'm going to do after that.
A lot of texts coming in with good wishes. One from Dave in Wicklow. Great to bump into Annalise in Melbourne at Christmas. She gave lots of time to all of us. I'm guessing you're like, Dave in Wicklow, we met lots of Irish people when we were in Melbourne, all of whom came to say hello. Possibly.
Yeah, it was quite cool. As I went around the world, there was lots of Irish people in all the different stopovers coming to meet me, and that was pretty nice.
So you finish up in Tokyo and you get the call, would you come and do the Volvo Ocean race again? Is the answer, yeah, I've experienced this, I can do it.
I don't know, I guess that's the thing. I think maybe you forget, you know, someone said maybe it's
like
similar to having, having babies. You kind of, you know, you forget about all the bad times, and it's such a hard mental challenge. Like physically, it's not like, everyone can be physically strong enough and fit enough to do it, but mentally it's, I think, the hardest thing, well, definitely the hardest thing I've ever had to do. And I'm sure for most people doing the race, it's the hardest thing they do.
Yeah, I think it'll be a very, very, very small percentage of our listeners who've listened to you and gone, do you know what, that sounds like something I might do.
Yeah, but I guess some people, you know, anyone who has a sense of adventure.
Yes, that's what you need here. Annalise, you've been brilliant to come in. Well done. It was quite an achievement, and best of luck over the next couple of years.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.